Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Welcome back to Your Kids Don't Suck. And thank you to people who have been emailing us and sending us notes on social media, because your feedback and your engagement in this material is just keeping us going. Thank you so much. And today we have a special guest. We're really excited because we think this topic is so rich and so alive. And our guest name is Seguin, and they are a single parent to four kids, and they have a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old, and 8-year-old twins. Oh my God, let's just sit with that for a second. They grew up in a fundamentalist Christian culture that condoned many harsh parenting strategies such as spanking, shaming, and sleep training. Seguin began their parenting journey with this same mindset, but they made a huge shift when their first child was a toddler. They have been creating a non-coercive, collaborative relationship with their kids since then for over 9 years now. Can you believe this? And the overarching theme of this podcast is, what is it like to be a non-coercive parent after an upbringing of religious control? Seguin, welcome.
Hi. So happy to be here.
Seguin Miller, your last name's Miller, huh?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us anything about your story and how you got here and how you became a non-coercive parent?
Yes. So I was really, really set, or I thought I had parenting figured out in the sense that I was going to spank my kids. Like, that was what I grew up with. I was spanked. All my siblings were spanked. Like, I had this idea that that's just like what you have to do. And like, as a new parent, like, I wasn't like excited to do that. I was like, you know, like when I was pregnant, I was thinking about like having fun with my kid and like showing them different cool things and adventures and singing songs with them and that kind of stuff. But I just saw spanking as like an unpleasant, but like necessity that you have to teach them to obey you for their safety. It kind of comes back to that, is like, yeah, that they just had to learn, and this is the way they had to learn, which, oh, it's so like, it's so hard to think about now, but yes. And I, the culture that I was in really reinforced that. So I didn't know a lot of like new parents my age, but like the people in my church and stuff, they, you know, they all spanked their kids, and just, it was just, yeah, it was just my culture. It was, yeah, exactly what I thought was right. The struggle for me in having this new baby was, when he would cry, it would affect me immensely. Like, I was not prepared for that. I guess I had this idea that, yeah, you know, just if they're doing this thing and you don't like, then, you know, it's just like so straightforward, so black and white. That was my thinking. So whenever I had this baby and he would be upset and he would be crying, I just like had that like instinct of like, I want to take care of this baby and like hold this baby and take care of it. And then I also had these influences of like, oh, well, you got to do cry it out, and you know, they got to cry sometimes and they're going to be sad sometimes, and you can't just give in to them and you'll spoil them and all this stuff. Like, that was the messaging that I had. So for the first like year plus of parenting, I was just so torn, and so sad, and so like, oh my gosh, it was really rough. And then I had this moment with my kiddo where he was doing toddler things and he was getting into the kitchen cabinet, and I had things under there. He wasn't safe for him to get into the kitchen cabinet. I did not have my house baby proof. And I just like had this idea that you just have to teach them not to do those things. And so what I was taught is like, as soon as they're able to like, if they're old enough to know that they shouldn't do something, then they're old enough to like be spanked or be punished in some way. So with him, I just started with, like, oh no, you can't get into that, and like redirecting him, doing something else with him, and he would just like go back to it, and I'd like redirect him again, and it's like, okay, he's disobeying me. I have to do something, like that almost like trauma response, fight or flight of like, okay, I got to do something now. And so the next time that he did that, I was like, okay, I have to physically punish him. So I just like thumped him on the top of his hand. And that was the first time I had physically hurt him. And he didn't cry. He just looked at me and he was very confused and surprised of like just like this look of like what is happening? Like just this cute little innocent face of like what, like why would my mom be like hurting me like this? And I realized like he doesn't get this. Like this concept of like, oh yeah, punishing or whatever, like he doesn't understand like why his parent would be hurting him like this. And it just like it broke my heart. And I was just like, from that moment, I was just like, no, we're not, I can't do this. Like I have to find another way to parent. So that is basically when I decided to completely change and not do any punishments, coercions. Yeah, that was my commitment to him, that I wasn't going to intentionally hurt him because of that look and that face that I saw in him, that he expected me to treat him well, and I wanted to be that person that he could really trust. So yeah, that was where I started.
Yeah, I'd love to just reflect on that moment because you had it instantly. You hurt your kid and you woke up. You like woke up right then. And obviously so many parents don't have that moment till much, much, much later. Like you're lucky. You're lucky because the damage, you didn't have to go back and repair like all this damage.
Well, I was thinking about our kids as our teachers. Ruthia, you say that a lot, like your kid is your spiritual guide, and if you're open to that, it's really interesting that for some people that come to this philosophy come to it early and some come to it later. And it really just depends on, I think, how you receive that message, like when you receive that message and why you receive that message when you do. And it's really about that. If you're open to it, your kid will guide you.
This is making me so emotional.
Ruthie was saying earlier, she's like, everything's making me cry today. We might
I
cry.
was fully expecting that. I was fully expecting that. Yes, I will be crying too.
It's painful.
Well, it's also
Yeah.
about like the it touches me so deeply that you were bonded enough to feel that moment. Like that means you were really bonded. Because I think when people override their children's pain, they're breaking the bond right then. The bond is being broken. It's so
It
sad
is.
because I know parents don't mean to do that. I have empathy
Right.
for them. I
I think
fucked
what
up and
happens is, yeah, maybe misinterpreting that look. Like I could have interpreted that as, oh, well, he obviously knows and he's, just,
manipulating
trying.
you.
Yeah, the manipulation, whatever. But yeah.
Okay, and then what happened?
Because this is your first child, right, Seguin? This is your very
Yes.
first. So he was like 18 months old.
I mean, it was before he was a year and a half, so maybe like 14, 15 months, somewhere in there. Very
Wow.
little. Yeah, and like I didn't have a specific like age in mind of like when I was supposed to start spanking or anything like that. And I think things might have gone down differently at a different age. There's something about him being this little baby of like, yeah, okay, this is not gonna work. This is not good. This is not good for us between like our relationship. I didn't want him to be afraid that I was going to be hurting him. So after that, I started trying to look for community online. I was talking to everyone about this, like literally everyone I knew. I was like buying books. I was, pretty quickly I found Gentle Parents Unite online and different resources like that. And oh my goodness, like just even stuff that was like not quite non-coercive, like some philosophies I see as kind of like in between. They're like they're not spanking, but they're not completely like non-coercive or whatever. So yeah, I was just like reading all this stuff and trying to figure out, okay, I know what I don't want to do, but now what do I do now? Yeah.
And then, so did you have a transitional period where you were being coercive? And I don't know, how did it unfold to non-coercion? How did you get here?
So it's like hard to explain. So like when I decided not to use corporal punishment, I also decided not to use punishment at all. So for me, it wasn't like, okay, well, instead of spanking, we'll do timeouts, or instead of, you know, like it was just like, okay.
Do you think, Caitlin, that's because of the stuff you were reading, or did you have like an intuition that you were like, I just don't want to, like, I want to preserve our relationship by every means necessary? Or did you like tiptoe into it and read more and then make the decision?
This has been a lot of years ago.
That's true.
I'm not exactly sure, you know, like it was all happening at once, but I do know I had the thought of like intentionally hurting him to teach him something is not what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, like if you're learning something, if a child is learning anything, I didn't think that I needed to hurt him or punish him in any way, whether that's shaming or timeouts or whatever, you know, even if it's not spanking, like I didn't want to cause that break in the relationship to teach. I wanted to teach some other way. Yeah.
I think that's an important distinction because like you said, in that middle ground, there is a lot of covert, right? Under the surface, like love withdrawal. I just reshared a clip of one of our episodes actually, Rithia, with you talking about that. That's, I think, what's interesting in your story, that you kind of were like, okay, I'm not going to spank, but I'm also not going to do all these other things.
Exactly.
I think even for me sometimes as like a therapist who works with kids and families and teaches other people, you know, the importance of this philosophy, doing it day in, day out with my toddler, I do struggle to remember that like, oh, but love withdrawal, right? We don't want to do that either. Sometimes I just react out of frustration. But the way that you are saying it, it's like, it sounds like it was clear. I'm sure you made, you know, I'm sure you had your times where it was hard to access,
absolutely.
But the distinction, like, it sounds like it was like a message from your kid into your heart, into your soul, where you were like, none of this. I want our relationship. And that's really cool.
Yes.
It takes people a long time to get there.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I love that.
Stephen, before we get into your history, which I'd really love to get into, what does it look like now with your four children as a single parent? what's happening? What does it look like in your days and being non-coercive with four kids? Because I have one kid. She has one kid. We don't really know.
Yeah. Well, having four kids is a lot. it's a lot of interactions, but I really love the relationship that I have with them. And really, it's like the best like love and relationships that I've had in my life are with my kids right now. And I was not expecting that necessarily. You know, I was like building this for so many years of like building that connection for them. I also for me, because of the person that I want to be, but I did not expect to feel so seen and connected with them. Oh my gosh. So it's really sweet. So they don't have any coercive limits. Like I'm not limiting like food and screens and, you know, things like that, that a lot of people have a lot of anxiety about. These are real, real things that we deal with as parents. What I really like is that they give me feedback on like, let's say I'm like really tired in the evening and I'm like responding to them in a tone that is kind of not the best. They'll tell me, they'll be like, stop being grumpy with me. And I just love that. I love that they feel comfortable sharing things with me, that I really get to know them and know what they're dealing with. And they'll ask me, you know, there are four of them. So they'll ask me, sometimes we'll be like driving home or there's something. And one of them will be like, hey, I need alone time with you when we get home. I have something I want to talk about. And so we'll make time for that. And, you know, the other kids mostly stay out. I mean, if they need me, they can come in, but you know, we'll have some alone time in the other room and they'll just share with me what they're going through. They'll be like, I don't know what to do about this. And like asking for advice. And I don't know. It's just, it's amazing.
Well, one of the things that's so amazing about that is that I think in traditional parenting and traditional education systems, we believe that kids can't and won't do that.
What do you mean?
That it's about, training up your kid to meet your standard as a parent, and the emphasis is on shaping them and molding them, right? And so if you don't know outside of that, if you don't know non-coercion, if you're not aware that children actually will and want to open up to their parents, that you're just going to assume they never will and they can't. That kids actually can't even do that. And teenagers don't do that, and preteens don't do that, and they hide and they sneak and they, and they withdraw and they run away, and of course, lying and hiding has been normalized.
Has nothing to do, as if it has nothing to do with parenting.
As if it has nothing to do that kids are
Right,
just
it's just
going to, they're
as
wired to
children
do
are.
it. Yeah, like they're just going to do it, and no matter what you do as a parent, you better be prepared with the techniques and the strategies of traditional parenting to deal with that.
Well, and I think to me it relates to, I mean, not everyone was raised as a fundamentalist Christian and whatever, but like I was taught that I needed saving, that I was like bad, and that God made me good. And so just to see your kids as being good already, that's different.
Now, are they all, they're all around the same age.
Yeah, they're all within 2.5 years.
So are they all just like, they're just buds and they like play together and do shit together all the time?
So, I mean, they do have similar interests, and it is really nice them all being around the same age, but I mean, they also have their squabbles for sure.
Yeah. This fundamentalist Christian orientation and upbringing, you literally said to it, fuck you, by doing this.
Yeah.
It goes completely against everything you were taught. You must have been raised generationally. Like, do your parents also, this was how they were raised? How does it,
Yes.
can you speak more
Yes.
about that? You also had mentioned to us when we were talking on WhatsApp about the book To Train Up a Child. That's the Bible, isn't it? The parenting Bible in fundamentalist Christian sects, certain. So
It is like that, yes.
it's like, well, this book, maybe you could talk about that a little bit, and also just like generationally, how it's a history, it's a lived history.
Yeah, it is. So I know my parents were raised that way, with spanking and Christianity and shame and all that. And I mean, for me, I can kind of see how things have improved. Like, I can see how my mom was more gentle with me than she was probably treated. Or I know that. I know my parents made an effort to do things a little bit differently. It was still within that culture, but I think that the way that my mom wanted to explain things to me, versus, she wasn't like a just because I said so type of parent. Like, she wanted to explain things to me. And I don't want to say, I mean, I definitely went through things that were not okay, so I'm not like justifying it. I'm just saying I do see that too, that, but as far as the book, okay, so whenever I decided this, that I was not going to punish my kids, and I was telling people this, and especially people that were in my kids' lives, like my mom, she gave me a co her copy of that book. I can't ever think of the name, To Train Up a Child. So she gave me that book of hers to borrow, and was like, "Hey, like, you don't have to change your mind." She wasn't like necessarily trying to change her mind. She was just like, this is why I did what I did, and this explains it in a way. Like,
This book.
this book uses the Bible verses or whatever to explain why spanking is important. I know that like people in my church told me that I should blanket train my baby, which is like teaching them to stay on their play blanket, and if they like go off the blanket, then you put them back. And you just like do this over and over, so they like learn to just stay in that area, not explore freely.
Do you
Which
spank
I,
them if they go off?
some people do, some people don't.
But it is one of those things that is taught in certain religious communities for sure, because the Duggars, Michelle Duggar of 19 kids and counting, whatever, how many kids they have now, she talks about that. I don't know if you guys know, but that came out recently that she talked about blanket training. And then there was also, I think, reference in that community to the book as well, To Train Up a Child.
Okay, what else is in the book?
It goes into quite detail about like where to spank a child, how to spank a child, when to spank a child, and it uses a lot of Bible verses trying to explain like how this is important or yeah. So
Wow.
so, so
Shouldn't that book be out of print now?
it should. It
Shouldn't that
really, really
be,
should.
isn't it illegal now? And we should not, that book should not be published anymore. Jesus Christ. Oh, I just said Jesus Christ. That was probably not good.
So that did not influence me in the way that, I mean, it didn't make me want to spank my kid. I was already very convinced, and I would say it maybe made me more convinced to not spank my kid.
You said your mom gave you that book, right? Was this because you were talking to your mom about how you were going to change your ways? And then your mom was like, oh, no, but I have a great book for you. Like, is that what she was saying?
Basically,
You should just
yes.
read this because it's justifying, her philosophy. Yeah, like you were saying with the verses. Yeah. So she was trying to help, I guess, turn you
Well,
into this.
I think she was scared. Fear is a really big deal to feel like, I don't know what's gonna happen. It probably felt to her like some kind of big experiment. Like not knowing what's gonna happen with the kiddos or if they're gonna be like really, I don't know. I mean, whatever the worst case scenario people think is gonna happen if you don't spank your kids.
You know, it is a big experiment. And so
It
is spanking your children is also a
is.
different experiment. Well, you will learn something else. The outcome will come out that way or this way, or and there are some trends in the experiments that we do know for sure that spanking will affect the relationship, and not spanking will also affect the relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's so much in here that must have been so scary for your mom, like you said, because the fear of also, like, this is deconstructing your religion as well. I mean,
So
what happened there?
how did you intellectually deconstruct it for yourself? Was it a long process?
So I was, whenever I decided to not punish my kid, I was still very much a Christian. I was still going to church. I was like on the worship team. Like I still, yeah. It was about a year or two later when I realized I just really don't believe in God anymore. And that was really, really hard. It was partly too because my brother, he stopped believing in God. So, and we were really close. So that was a hard one too. It's like I either have to believe that he's like gonna go to hell, like based on what I believe as a kid, like either he's gonna go to hell or maybe God's compassionate and God thinks, maybe God sees what I see and sees that my brother is like a really great person and shouldn't be in hell. Like, oh my gosh, all these things. And also with like raising my kids and not believing in punishment and then being like, wow, like I don't think I deserve eternal punishment, like starting to like love myself that way. And then but it was really like losing like my best friend in a way, because since I was a toddler, like I memorized Bible verses and like believed that like God was in my heart and God was protecting me and God was always with me and God, always saw me, and like it was a huge, huge part of my life. So then when I realized like, wow, I just don't think that God is real, then it was really, really scary and really like I felt really depressed of like I don't have this like friend, this all-knowing friend in my life anymore. And yeah, I mean, I was able later to realize, okay, maybe God wasn't there for all of this, but I was there for me, and I was there for myself. So, yeah.
Not everybody, I just wanted to say that not everybody who changes their mind about the traditional parenting methods that have been passed down through their religious communities doesn't necessarily mean that they also too, decide that they don't believe in God anymore, or they feel that, you know, God's not real, or that they're going to separate from the church. That's just, I was kind of referring to you because that's all tied up in what happened with you as well. Your parenting, your separation.
Right. Mm. Yes. It was connected. It wasn't like the only thing that led me to leave Christianity, but the Christianity, the version I grew up in, was definitely very much about punishment.
Yeah.
And obedience and control. And as I moved away from those things, then it made a lot less sense of like, yeah.
Wow.
It's so incredible to just see the absolute parallel between, you know, religious beliefs and authoritarian parenting. If you're going to deconstruct one, you're going to probably, if you're really going to do it, you're going to be deconstructing both at the same time.
Because, right, what do you guys think? Can you, do you think? I mean, I'm curious. Do you think you can do this without the other?
I mean, if you have the idea, an idea or version of God that is good and non-coercive, then sure. But if you have a version of a God that is very angry and controlling and punishes people, then maybe not.
You know, but it reminds me of the hypocrisy of being a gentle parent. I don't want to kick gentle parenting because it's a really great progression.
Right.
From corporal punishment and whatever, screaming and yelling. You know, it's great. It's good. It's a great, you know, it's great progress. Right. But the problem is, if you become a gentle parent and then you don't apply your parenting philosophy to also all the oppressive systems, then you're not really doing the work, I feel.
It's a complete mindset. I mean, I really applied it to every area in my life. I don't think I could have just applied it to parenting.
Right.
Yeah. Because like to treat someone else that way, to say, okay, this person, this little person, you know, unless you're just partial to little people, which, I mean, I love little people, but like, yeah, I had to believe that for myself too. And for other people too, that we're doing our best and didn't deserve to be treated like that.
Right.
Did you have to go through a process of leaving your community in a way?
Absolutely, I did. Yes.
Build a new one?
Yes, I have now. But yes, I, you know, leaving the church that I was in, well, I also later on left my marriage and stuff. So I've lost a lot of, it was a very big loss, leaving Christianity, yes.
It's a huge amount of grief. And for people who are listening that are thinking, like, maybe they're on this path, like, I can understand why people, they can't make the shift yet.
Right.
It's terrifying.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah, I do have community now, like, mostly online.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you also in like a really religious area, like physically? Is it a religious place that you
definitely
live?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yeah. Bro, it's so hard.
Yeah.
We were just talking about seeing coercion at the park. You know, when I go to the park and my kid, she's not two yet, so I see it everywhere, but it's all very like gentle parenting, but it's coercion. So what a wild ride it must be to live also the religious aspect, like in your community day to day, and then you're over here.
Yeah, it can definitely feel very isolating. Yes.
It's isolating and it's very sane.
Mm-hmm.
I always say leaving my abusive family was so devastating. And yet I got back my sanity. I feel like I became sane to myself. I became who I am, even though, yes, there's all this grief and loss
That's true.
and life is hard, and it's hard to be a conscious person. It's really, my therapist always says it's lonely at the top, and it always makes me crack up. I love when
That's
she
so
says
funny.
it.
It's so true.
I can't be any other way. Like once I thought through it, it's like, well, yeah, I can't go back. Like so yeah, it is freeing in a way. And you know, I find people that do understand, and that's good.
Is there any place where you're stuck? Like in your parenting on this non-coercive path, like a place where you get really hung up or stuck or confused or lost or like, I don't know, just curious where your hard places are as a in this mindset.
That is a really good question. I think I'm struggling to answer. Let me think about this.
Take
Where do
your
I get
time.
st
There's no rush, no rush.
Where do I get stuck? I mean, the first thing that comes up for me is like the really intense fear that I can feel when something, you know, new comes up with my kids or surprising, and that it's generational, I know that, but it's just like this fear of like it's fight or flight, something really bad is going to happen, so I have to act now. And I know my kids feel this, and they'll tell me about it because they're so in tune. And I have, you know, many, many times told them, hey, if you ever feel like if I ever do something that, you know, would make you feel like you're in trouble, then, you know, let me know, because I don't want you to ever feel like you're in trouble with me or whatever. So I'll like have this like fear reaction, and they'll be like, are you upset? Are you upset with me? You know, it's like, I just got really, really scared. I trust you, and will I go through this? You know, I really, really trust you. It's just like the stuff that I've been through in my life that, you know, yeah, I'm really scared of some things.
That is so beautiful. I love that. I love the transparency because our children need to know we are human beings. We're wounded, we're trying, we're failing, we have feelings, we are humans. And we need to model that. Because they're going to go through it and they need to know it's okay and it's normal. It's, you know, life is hard. And something my partner keeps saying to me, which is so amazing. Because one of my big fears, which I feel is most parents fear, is that my child will end up stuck in some terrible place in her life. She's going to end up, well, you said this, Kara, this is you. You're talking about the fear that she'll become a drug addict or, I don't know. Things that are scary that you're scared your kid will get caught in. She'll hate herself and be lost. She'll get in some kind of clinical depression and stay there for her whole life. I don't know, the things we're scared of that our children will be lost to us. And I think was it you, Carrie, you were saying, well, but the whole thing is that we will be there for them no matter what happens. That's the whole thing about this path. It's not about I don't want my child to hit those places, and of course we don't, but it's that we will be there through all of it, and none of us had that. None of us had that I know of. Very few people, where you knew your parent would be right next to you and walk you through it and help you in any way that they possibly could. And that's what this path is. It's not about we're gonna keep our kids from the pain of life. We're not going to.
Well, yeah, and that's what keeps them safe in a way, is like this note, like that's why I do feel confident about this, is like I know that they can come to me, that they feel safe with me to come to me and tell me these things. So this is good.
Yeah, you know, when my daughter is not wanting to come to me to things, I always use it as a time to look at myself. Is there anything I am doing that would make her not want to come to me? Even though there's healthy separation. So I also try to make space for that. Like she's differentiating, she's pushing away because she needs to, and like really make space for that. And also, am I fully available?
The urgency to respond is usually a response with judgment. I find that when I can make space to step back and prioritize our connection, those are the times that I'm proud of the way that I showed up as a parent. Every single time I just react to her, it was something in there was a mistake. something in there I regret because it's out of trigger.
Yeah, me too.
I really like that.
Right? It's
really
not out good. Of self. It's self is what we're talking about, the authenticity in the parenting and separating oneself from one's ingrained belief system. Like, who am I really? Who really am I? I'm scared, but I'm not mean. I'm scared, but I'm not angry at my child or that I don't want to shame her, you know? So, oh God, it's hard. My God, it's hard, but it's so worth it.
Yeah, it is.
Well, that thing about the urgency is why I'm always telling parents, like in my support groups, I'm always like, don't say it. notice what you're about to say. I mean, I there are hundreds of things I almost say all day long that I'm so glad I didn't say when I think about it. When I really think about it, I'm like, why do you need to say that?
Right.
And I'm sure we can all remember like things our parents said to us that fucking stuck.
Mm-hmm.
That came out of that place of fear.
Yeah.
They were just afraid, I'm sure. Really, you peel back all the layers. At the end of the day, it's fear.
Sigwin, we were hoping you might read your letter that you wrote to your son and talk about this letter.
I will read this letter. So I called this letter whenever I wrote it. It's kind of funny because I just found it recently. I kind of forgotten about it, but I called it, I am so sorry. And it's like an apology letter to my toddler because he was so little that I felt like I couldn't really, really explain in a way that he would understand like how I was feeling. And I just really wanted to write it out for him, but also like for myself, because I was feeling really, really bad. I was feeling really hard on myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, so like, I'm trying to accept my kid and love my kid in this big way. And I'm realizing that I also need to accept and love myself. Even though I did these, I hurt my kid. Like I hurt him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Dear baby, I hurt you. I thumped your hand in the kitchen. I was trying to teach you not to open the cabinet under the sink. My heart was to keep you safe. You looked so betrayed. I decided to never hurt you like that again. I'm so sorry. Your look inspired me to find a better way to teach you. I'm glad I noticed your pain. I ignored you in a restaurant. You were tired and crying and reaching for me. I thought I had to teach you to sit in your chair and wait. I thought my audience wanted me to treat you this way. I cried so much afterwards. What I did was not right. You were right. I should have listened to you. I'm sorry I let the wrong voices in my head win. I was afraid and didn't know what to do, but now I know. I did sleep training. I put you in your bed alone and didn't come back even when you cried and cried. I am so sorry. I will never do this again. You needed me and I was not responding to you. I am attentive to you now and I don't focus on your mistakes. I will not hit you. I try to catch your subtle cues that you need my help. I'm learning to parent you in a new and better way. I feel happier, more at peace, and closer to you. I try to work with you, not against you. I love you. I always did, but I didn't know how to show it. Thank you for helping me learn these hard lessons. It was your patience and kindness and goodness that convicted me and made me seek for answers. You were good and precious, and I just didn't know what I was doing. You are worth it, my sweet son. You are worth changing for. You are worth any judgments I receive for parenting you in a gentle way. Love, Mama. Oh my gosh, I can't read it without crying. So it's really sweet. So I actually, I shared this with my kid. He's 10 now. And I was just like, hey, so remember how you changed my life when you were a toddler? so I wrote this thing for you. And immediately he was like, I want to read it. I want to read it. He was just like, he was so happy. So I just, it was on my phone. So I just handed him my phone. And he read it. And he cried. And he just had a really sweet moment together, and he just said, "I love it. I love all of it."
Wow.
Yeah. I think my favorite part is like either the part where I said like I love you and I always did, but I didn't know how to show it, because I really felt that like everything I did, I was trying so hard to be loving. It's just like realizing that what I did wasn't loving, you know, it wasn't showing the love that I wanted to show. And then the part at the end too of like, because the place that I was in, it was just anytime it was just me and my kid, it was easy to be tuned into him. But anytime I was with other people that I knew that they were like, that they expected and wanted me to treat him harshly, like whenever I was feeling that from them, it just made it so, so much harder. And yeah, I just really, really felt that he was totally worth all of the pain and struggle and blood, sweat, and tears of like changing everything. Like, he's totally worth it.
I love the parts of the letter where you go, "You were right. I should have listened to you." I love that, because our children are brilliant. You know, it's just that parents just get in the way of the brilliance, and they get it and they make it shut down, but it's so right there. We don't have to, we could just follow them. You know, it's hard to do, but I love that part. Well, you're really speaking to how he was so on point.
Right.
Love that. Yep.
I was like, yep, he knew.
Yeah, and babies are, and children are experts on what they need. They are. They're experts. You know, I had an insight when you were reading your letter. I used to do this thing with my daughter. Well, first we did swaddling, which she seemed to really like. But then as she got older and we weren't swaddling anymore, we would kind of hold her down. And then she would kind of cry and fight, and then she'd pass out and she'd sleep. So we got in this habit of like kind of holding her down to get her to go into a nap. And she's told me now that she remembers that she absolutely hated it. And I feel so bad about it. But she also became a hitter. Like, so she, I mean, it was because we got divorced and so many reasons, but she was hit kids and me for years. And I'm like, oh, I think that's also related to me holding her down. Like, I think her hitting was related to needing to work out how powerless she felt in her body by that behavior. We did it for like 2 years. We did like the holding down thing for like, it was before I was non-coercive.
Yeah.
Where I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. I mean, I really did. I thought I was following directions. Like, oh, kids just need containment and da da da. And then, you know, I really was doing my best. And I can't tell you how much I regret a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like that is why we're doing this podcast and my videos and, you know, all the things I'm doing is because people say you're waking up what I already knew. That's what parents say all the time. You're helping me trust what I was intuitively feeling, how I really wanted to parent, but I didn't feel allowed. I never saw examples of it. No one supported it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mirrored. And you're mirroring something that's already there. I love that. I feel like that's what you're also offering us, Sequin, right now, like a reminder.
Yeah, it is really important.
Even in highly rigid communities that are rigid, you know, rigid, rigid belief systems. And then when you bring God into it, well, fuck. And when you know.
Yeah, you're pigeonholed.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that if you think of this letter as being also a reflection of what I was saying to myself, I'm validating for myself that I was right, that my intuition was right for like, yeah, that's really, really cool.
That's exactly what I was thinking too. That, like, you know, back inside of, I know Gabor Mate said recently that his book on Hold On To Your Kids, he was on a podcast talking about that one. And obviously a lot of what we talk about is what he shares, especially with the trauma lens. But anyway, he was saying that the feedback he got from that book from the majority of parents, a lot of it was from parents saying like, thank you for validating my instincts. Like, this is actually what I thought I should do. And I was tailoring my way of doing things to everybody else. And that letter, it's like, if you just replace Sun with, you know, Sequin, it's that message of like, I'm so sorry. I was doing what I thought I should do. And I'm so sorry to, you know, the way that I tried to shape myself. I was just being, it was just what I was being told.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome. I've definitely had those conversations with myself of like, I'm so sorry I did that to
Yes.
myself.
Yes.
Yes, so good.
God, it's so deep, this work.
Well, I just posted a video like yesterday. It's called The Psychic Apology. Someone wrote me saying I did all these traditional parenting practices and I really regret it and I don't know what to do. I think that her kid is like 4 or 6. Anyway, I was suggesting a psychic apology where you go, I do this with my daughter. It's fine to do an out loud apology like you did is great, but you can also do regular psychic apologies where you just, you go into a relaxed state and you go to the spirit of your child and you say, I am so sorry for anything that I gave you that was not yours. Anything generational that I handed to you that I made you eat or swallow or take on, please give it back to me. And you ask to have it energetically give it back. You can imagine cutting cords and clearing their energy field with love. And I do that regularly with my daughter because I am a great parent and I'm still passing stuff down. I see it. I am. And it's unconscious. And some of it is how I act and behave. And some of it is because of how I treat myself. And
Right.
my child is watching the ways that I'm really harsh and cruel to myself. And she's absorbing that. So I try to take that back on a regular basis.
Yes, that practice is also something you can do with your inner child. A psychic apology, a meditation, a visualization, a holding. I do that with my kid. I'll hold her and I'll picture myself. And I'll transmit, and I'll take back and I'll do all this parts work kind of sort of thing, inner child. But it is like an apology and a holding of you.
I was actually going to ask y'all like what you do when you notice those if you notice yourself being harsh to yourself, like what is your kind of go-to reaction of how you what you do?
A good question. I think I have a lot of different things that I do. A lot of it is after the fact. A lot of it is like going back and apologizing to myself after I've done something that's not in alignment with my values. Vivek says, my reality is clashing with my philosophy or ideology.
Ideology,
He's
yeah.
like, oh, my reality is clashing with my philosophy. And I think if I can catch that after, I will do a lot of like self-compassion, holding of my own kid, apologizing, deep gratitude for the work that I am doing. I practice that with my kid too. I have to say, I'm really conscious of apologizing and telling her, even though she's not even two. I've said several times, I can count definitely, I think 3 or 4 times where I've sat down with her and I've said, I'm so sorry. I was really frustrated, but not at you. I was frustrated because the cat kept asking me for the treats. And then I kind of like, I'll join her and we'll get playful and we'll make a connection experience, like a connected experience out of it. But I'm really talking to myself there too.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. What about you, Ruthia?
There's a zillion, I mean, there's so much
Zillion
I've
things.
done to love myself. It's been the longest, long ass journey. But I feel like something that's really refined in my process at this point is if I am in pain. Like, if I feel in emotional pain of any way, it means there's usually a false belief that I'm telling myself. If I'm contracting, if I feel shut down, if I'm feeling hatred or anger or depression, there's usually some false belief going on that is from my past. Like, I'm alone. People don't love me. I can't do what I want. Something's wrong with me. All the false beliefs. And I have to figure out which is the one I'm telling myself right now. And then I have a way I get to the truth. It's kind of like a spiritual, it's like my higher self. I get to my higher self and say, what's true about this? And sometimes I have to have a lot of feelings before I can get to the truth. I have to cry first or like let my anger out or, think about my memories and what it's related to. And then I can get to the truth. But the practice is getting to the truth.
Yeah. And then, you mentioned like the loving adult or the guide or whatever that you're, that's then also, it is applicable to this practice of compassion because then you become that for yourself to remind you of what's true and why usually you're so afraid. So you hold that as that loving guide and then look at what you can be as a parent for your own kid. I mean, it's, you can't have one without the other.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, Seguin. If you don't believe in God, do you have a spiritual path? Like, do you have a spiritual life? And I don't care if you do or don't, really. There's no judgment either way. But would you say that you have one now? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I would say I do. And that took a while to realize that too. So I feel very connected with nature. So that is probably the closest to spirituality that I get, is spending some time out in nature and feeling connected in that way. But yes, I do have some sort of spiritual practice.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm experiencing you in a really spiritual way today.
Yeah, because spirituality is like, it's giving connectedness. You know, the essence of it is really that you're connected. You're connected to all things. You believe in, you know, some sort of thing, something outside the self that like brings us all together with love.
Right.
You know, and it's like, well, we're on this planet, like we're on this rock. It's like spinning around and all this shit's going on. And so I want to show up with that.
But maybe it's not everyone conceives of it outside of ourselves, you know.
True, yeah.
Because I also believe we are made of love.
Yeah.
We are that, you know, and like that's the whole thing of this teacher, spiritual teacher I really love named Gangaji. She always says, give up the search. She says, you are that. You are what you're looking for. And that always helps me a lot.
That's really beautiful. I like that.
Not in an ego way. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you're made of the thing you're looking for. It's like, yeah, if you're in water looking for water, you are that thing. So she says, rest in who you are. And that's a big practice of mine, to rest in who I am, which when I'm triggered, I cannot do.
That's when we're searching for the answer.
Yeah.
Right? That's when you're like, well, what's going to make me better and fix it? And right. Well, for me, I know it's in me and my child guides me there. That's my, I feel children have always been my sort of sense of connectedness, love. They are there, right there. You know, it's amazing.
I know. And they're so naturally connected to love.
Right.
Yes. Yes. No. They are.
You know, we do get deep with it over here, because it's undeniable.
Wait, that's why we're having this conversation, because we're trying to not get in the way.
Yes. And I just want to hug everybody on this call right now. I do.
Hugs.
So this will be the last question, Seguin, for you. Is there anything you want parents to know that comes to mind? Like, if you had to give a little, like, very general advice around this, around non-coercive collaborative parenting, you're like, oh, I would love for you to know this thing.
Well, I guess, you know, with what I've been through, I would say definitely find your people, find your community. So you have that support, whether it's, you know, through therapy or through like groups that I've found. That's really, really important. And then also just like what we're talking about with like being gentle with yourself, because it really is something that like builds over time. And if you can like incorporate that mindset into like all the areas of your life, no matter who you're dealing with, whether it's yourself or other people, then just like builds over time, and you just like, it's like a muscle, and you just like feel more compassionate, and then you realize it. You're like, whoa, I'm like being more compassionate. It's so cool. So, I mean, I think when I was struggling really hard of being like, oh my gosh, why do I keep making them same mistakes over and over again? You know, like just knowing that, okay, this is something that you can get better at, you know?
That's great. I think of it as very similar to doing anti-racism work internally.
Right.
It's like, it takes years and years and years to even know where you are on the map of that, at least for me as a white person, I'm saying. And this is so similar. We're undoing patriarchal systems of, you know, I don't know, hundreds
oppression.
Of years. Hundreds of years of this childism. Mm. Yeah. It takes time. It's the long arc of learning.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone,
at www.caratedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at caratedstonetherapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rithia Lee, at www.rithia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rithia Lee, on Instagram at Rithia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rithia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rithia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.